You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 15th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my buddy who's feeling better. It's Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Yeah. Absolutely right. I am. And for lack of using the word that we tested out before the show, for the synonym for absolutely right, dummy.
How about shot with an eye?
Okay. I hope it was a glass eye.
That was too blunt. All right. Yeah. You had a little bit of a belly pain. Let's put it that way.
I had pain, sharp pains, and went to the emergency room Friday, and so was taking some medication and was no blogging on Friday and to listeners who do read the blog, no blogging on Saturday either, basically, because my wife and I went to a Taro Hakase concert, which had some other interesting things. All the music was great, but got me home in time for the podcast, which is really the important thing.
That's right. But suffice to say, you might be on drugs tonight. So if you say something crazy, we'll just blame the medication.
Well, that's,
hey, you got an out.
Well, hey, that's
this that's, time.
Yeah. Well, hey, well, that's what somebody said when I showed them the data we're going to talk about. They asked me if I was on drugs.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that wasn't the first time. Anyway, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Jose Osuna of the Swallows. We're going to discuss some striking differences and examine a couple of records and then close things out with some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, last week I went out to Jingu Stadium where I spoke to players from the photographer's well adjacent to the dugout, and I basically got a hold of three guys, and two of them have not yet come down with COVID.
Not yet.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. The first one, we had a nice chat with Yuhei Nakamura, and he's gone on the sick list. So, but the next guy I talked to was Jose Osuna. And then I talked to Domingo Santana, and Domingo Santana hit a couple of home runs in the next couple of games. So I'm sure he's happy. He'll be happy to talk with me next time. Sometimes it doesn't work like that.
No. Yeah.
Michael Nakamura would attest to.
Former Fighters closer and Giants reliever. Yeah.
How do these guys always end up with the Giants? You know, what is it? The club of guys who don't want to talk to Jim? I mean, not always, of course, because some guys, you know, like Scott would
Scott Matheson.
Yeah. Yes. Scott Matheson would never stop. You know, he would always stop and talk. So.
I'll always stop and talk to you, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Well,
okay. Or listen to you. I'm sorry.
You say that. Yeah, well, those two are distinctly different things. Nobody actually talks with me.
Because they can't get a word in.
Hashtag high heat.
Are you finished?
Does this guy breathe?
Are you finished?
Am I finished? Oh, go ahead, sir.
I had to prove a point. Okay.
Yeah, well.
It's one data point,
and I'm yeah. I was gonna say my one point for the night.
Okay, well, you got it. So be happy. Okay. So anyway, I talked to Jose Osuna, and we discussed his the Swallows, the team, his contract, and manager, and Munetaka Murakami, and the WBC. So let's have a listen. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Yakult Swallows first baseman, Jose Osuna. Thank you for being on our show.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it for the opportunity. So it feels so good. You know, we've been having like a tough beginning of the season, like a team, but still early. It's a really long season. We're just working on it to get better.
Yeah, I mean, you've been pretty consistent in your time here in Japan. What has been the maybe the one some of the big adjustments you made to come and play in Japanese baseball?
I think it's almost the same baseball. It's a really good baseball right here. That's why they've been the champions in the World Baseball Classic. That told the world they are really good here. So it's about the. For me, like especially about offensive size, like about timing.
Mm-hmm.
So different timing, how they pitch in America. That's all about making adjustments. So that's the most important here.
Yeah, timing's hard. And is it easier that there's only five teams in the league and for you to get the timing?
Here it's almost the same timing. Sometimes they make a stop, like. They love to do a quick pitch or something we're not usual in America, but like I said before, it's something about like making adjustment, that's all.
Okay, now even this year with Murakami struggling, finding his rhythm, you still get to hit a lot of times with somebody on base.
That's part of baseball, you know, so he's been struggling this year, but we still know he's the best player right here, in Japan for some reason. For that reason, he beat the Triple Crown last year, so it's not everybody allowed to do that. You know, he's been, so consistent in the last couple of years, so
right.
This is part of baseball.
You came here, and he was a Rookie of the Year. And what was your first impression of this guy?
To me, it's unbelievable. Just as soon as I saw him, in my first year, I just said, okay, this guy can be so good in Major League. He's up. All the potential, all the talents of his work, hard worker. So I think he's going to have a good success when he got the opportunity to go to America.
Speaking of America, I could hear your voice on the video when Japan won the WB, when they walked off against Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was so happy, when Muni hit that double, to win the game. Because he was a struggler, you know, so... We've been in that situation before, so we had that feeling he was having that moment. So
right.
As soon as he hit that ball, we were so happy for him.
Yeah, I could hear that. Everybody was going nuts. That
yeah,
was,
yeah.
And every team in Japan was watching on TV.
Yeah, it's a really good moment for him and for the country for sure.
Okay, now, what's your contract status here in Japan? Is this the end of a third-year contract or a second-year contract?
No, I have one more year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have 2024.
So you signed 2-2-year contracts?
No, I got my first contract was 1 year deal, and after that I got extension for 3 more years.
Oh, excellent. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Because Yakult is one of the teams that's famous for being patient.
Yeah, I mean... I'm so appreciated with the team. I so feel so good here. We have a really good team, coaches, teammates, office. I think we are going on the same way. You know, we are playing together. We are putting everything we can do to win again. So that's why we've been the champion for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the opportunity to get a 3-year deal. So that's good.
Yeah, they did that before when they won a championship in 2015. They had some big players who Tony Barnett, who's a scout now, he got a 3-year deal. And Vladimir Valentin, who then set the home run record.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a big deal. So when you come here, you've got the manager, Shingo Takatsu. He seems what kind of a manager? He's kind of a quiet. He looks kind of stern, but he seems very laid back.
He's really good. He's really good manager. He loves the communication with the players. So it's a lot of good things when we come here, and we know it's not that easy to play in a Japanese team, but we have the opportunity to play guys like Takatsu. You know, he's trying to use the communication with the players. So that's really good when you're coming for the first year here.
Sure. Okay, well, I'm not going to keep you, but I just want to thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you on again before another 3 years.
Thank you, man.
Although hopefully you'll be here in 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Osuna. It was a real pleasure, and, you know, we're going through this cycle of seeing players sometimes that we haven't seen in 5 years and sometimes we've never seen.
Correct.
You know, we've never talked to them, so it's like... I'm so keen to catch up, but I'm also so keen to meet these guys, and I feel apologetic. I would have been talking to you 3 years ago, but you weren't here. You weren't here yet. And they kept us off the field. So, okay. So what would you, what did you take away from Mr. Osuna?
Well, my one point that I want to talk about tonight was just what I took away from the way he discussed Murakami. his teammate. His teammate, not the upstart pitcher who has stunned many by getting the nod as the top pitcher honor for the Central League.
Yeah, Murakami-sama too.
Yeah, this past week. But look, I've been, you know, looking at Japanese baseball for a long time and in Japan for a long time since the 90s. And when we usually talk or ask a player about a teammate, you know, we have to bust out a towel to wipe ourselves down because there's so much foamy praise for all the guys the players heap on their teammates. And I'm like, okay, you know, we understand. I understand. I'm not going to ask you about a teammate because I'm just going to get sloppy praise all over the place. Towel.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to bring our own towels pretty much. Yeah.
But we made it a point to talk about it on the show, the struggle that Murakami had been having since the end of last season. And I did bump into a scout this past, it was earlier this month, and talked to him. His name will remain out of our podcast.
Because no scouts know us. That's the rule. And we never talk to them.
Okay. Evaluator. Anyway.
They don't know who we are. That's the easiest way to say it.
And Murakami had been struggling so much. This scout left Japan on May 8th. And he after I walked away from him, he made it a point to chase me down. He says, John, he's yelling at me. And he wanted to talk about Murakami. And he's asking me, is the guy married? Does he have a girlfriend? Is there some off the field situation that he is going through that might be contributing to what we're seeing on the field right now? And I said, sure, I wouldn't know. I don't pay attention to a lot of the off the field stuff. And
yeah,
most of the players, if you ever ask them anyway, what do they say? It doesn't matter. None of this stuff. It's just like Michael Franco of the Eagles told us the other day, at the end of the day, it's about getting the results on the field. So none of that stuff really matters. Although you and I have heard plenty of stories about off the field escapades and things going on with players and their or partners or whatever. We've heard stories, but
yeah, we hear the stories. And right. my wife could tell you, she told me who Murakami is dating.
Right. I just listened to the praise and the way Jose explained and talked about Murakami, saying, look, we have faith in the guy. We know that we have the ultimate belief that the kid's going to break through. And this is just a rough patch, and stop making a big deal about it. Don't ask us about it. In fact, leave him alone is basically what I heard. I mean, Jose didn't say that.
Yeah.
But he said it's going to happen. It happens to everybody. If you're going to play the game, these are some of the things you're going to go through. You're going to have ups. And there are downs that go with the ups, and you got to go down to get to the ups. So in some respects, I mean, you could be flat, but nobody's flat. So you're going to go down and then you're going to go up. And so let's not make a big deal out of it. And of course, here it is on Saturday night. Of course, it was Shinichi, and Murakami breaks out with a 2-home run game, a 3-hit game, and basically drives in all the runs that they used to beat the Dragons. So, I mean, look, the last time, to be honest, the last time I heard a player say anything, let's call it semi-unflattering, about a teammate was a certain Fighters player in 2006 after Nippon Ham had just beaten Junichi for the Japan Series Championship. And we heard a teammate talking about Shinjo without naming Shinjo.
Yeah,
well, and the player will remain anonymous as well. But if you do the math, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, and like I said, that was just semi-unflattering. So these teammates, whenever you ask them about someone on there in the same locker room, you're going to get that kind of talk. But I really like how blunt Jose was. Look, it's not a big deal. Obviously, Jose is not seeing anything going on in his mechanics, although I said look at his feet, and the feet steadied. They have become a little more steady recently, and so that is one thing. And the swing is the swing. And to the first home run tonight, I thought it was one of those Jingu home runs. The second one, it was a blast. One of those get out of the way, even if you're in the outfield, just let it bounce off a seat, because that thing's coming in hot.
Well, the first one he hit last weekend was it was an outside pitch. It was I'm trying to remember. He hit two home runs in the last weekend series, and the first one was one where the guy threw him a kind of a fat fastball, and he fouled it off. And I'm going, geez, he should have creamed that one. And the guy threw him exactly the same, pitch again.
Yes.
And he hit it into the right field stands. Okay. And then the next day, he hit one out of the zone off the end of the bat that would have left Jingu Stadium if it didn't have a 15-foot high screen over the left field wall. It would have gone, you know, it would have ended up in the street. So that
that was like his first home run today. He really didn't square it up, so but it went out. And he has that kind of power, and that was what I was talking about with the scout the other day. I said, look, this guy, and he has seen it anyway, so I didn't really have to tell him. I don't think I was telling him anything new, but he didn't have to square up a ball to get it out of a park here in Japan.
He's still missing a little bit on it, because we saw him in Koshien this week hit a couple of balls, and the broadcasters were like going, oh man, he creamed that one, and there it's dying on the warning track. So he hasn't been getting it as much of it as he usually does.
Mm-hmm.
But he has been making better contact, and that's been kind of the thing.
So that was the big thing. I think Jose was really friendly and did his best in his let's call it his second language, because I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Another language, but these guys, we always appreciate them doing these interviews in English, and I thought he did a great job with that. So, what about you? What did you?
Well, of course, my question, and of course, and he kind of got it like I was talking about. I actually wanted to talk about him instead of Murakami.
Yes, I know.
About Murakami, but you know, that happens.
Well, you got to slow down. You got to remember these guys are in a second language. You go to town on them, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, I had this, I'll tell you a short, my aside for the night was when I started this gig with Yomiuri in 1998, I go to the ballpark and I talk to people, and my Japanese listening comprehension was so poor that basically I really couldn't follow what they were answering until I had a chance to sit and listen to the tape 100 times. So sometimes, I'd start out saying, you know, how do you get from point A to point B? And he's going, well, I get to C this way. And so I'm answering the next question in the sequence, and he's completely lost, and he's going, okay, how about Z? and I think this conversation is just going, suddenly he's just picking out random he's going in random directions, and that happened a lot, and this is a kind of that kind of case. I could, you know, because it's in my native language, but now I'm so much better at picking out when people aren't following that I can rephrase it. And I found Shohei Ohtani's actually good at that when you talk to him one-to-one, because his vocabulary is not great, but he really wants to communicate. When he wants to communicate, he's going to explain it to you in ways that you'll understand eventually. So he's dogged in that. Oh, well, you know, what a surprise. He's dogged and determined to do something. You know, you can't stand in his way, but any case. So the question of course was, because he's leading the league in walks, you're still getting lots of chance to bat with runners on base. So obviously it's not a big problem. And you're going to have that regardless of whether he's hitting home runs or not, he's still going to be on base. So anyway, what I got out of it, I guess what I really wanted to know was his contract, which I was glad to hear, because that brought me back to the days of Vladimir Valentin and Tony Barnett and the third guy they gave the 3-year contract to after his big first year.
I thought it was Millage.
It was Lasting's Millage. So anyway, so that brought me back to those guys, and that Millage didn't work out for those full 3 years. But the other two, you know, really paid off handsomely. And so I hope that is the case with the Swallows. They're continuing to do the things that they need to do. And I was happy to hear his discussion of, I don't really have a good read on Shingo Takatsu. I've barely ever spoken to him. Only from what I see on TV. So the idea that he was communicating with the players really well, and that he's really, I'm not surprised, because that's sort of the Yakult Swallows managers thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's what Yakult Swallows managers do typically, is talk to the guys. And I could tell how much he appreciated that, because, you know, when he said, he knows it's not easy for us, of course. Takatsu, of course, played in MLB, and he played in Korea, and he played in Taiwan. So if anybody knows how hard it is to play in a foreign country, it's going to be Shingo Takatsu.
Sure.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. So I really appreciate him coming over to talk with me, you know, because he doesn't know me from Adam West or any other Adam.
Sure. We have not met, obviously, the gap of 3 years has rendered us faceless yep. among the Swallows players in particular. Some of the other guys, we have at least seen them online, sure. had some interaction with some of the other guys, but with
yeah.
the Swallows
yeah,
guys,
I told him that the Swallows PR had prevented them from giving us interviews online. He went like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Really? They never told us.
Right. Yes. Well, I discovered that, right? That I had already talked to a player and he had cleared it. And I said, well,
yeah,
I had to jump through the hoops for this team. And so I have to go through the PR department. And so I did. And then I said, well, I put in the request. And the guy said, well, they never asked me. And I said, they never asked you. Well, they turned me down. They said, you said no. So,
I remember so that. I remember the team too.
Yes. Well, yeah, we won't go into that for fear of never getting an interview with one of its players. But anyway, so we know this happened. So we do appreciate that. So yeah. we can go on to talk about the Swallows then and seamlessly transition into talking about them just a little bit. I know yeah. they had some really low, let's call it little league level defense on Thursday and a loss to the Dragons, but there was
it was bad. Well, and it was almost contagious. The Dragons caught a little of that too, but they survived that.
well they didn't tonight. They had at least three errors. I didn't see the very end because I had switched over the sound to the Oryx Hawks game, or the Oryx Buffaloes and Hawks game. But anyway, so anyway, the Dragons won 7-1 on Thursday, but there had been a breakout of illnesses, including Corona. A number of players and some of the coaches, they talked about being separated from the team, let's call it that. And at least Yuhei Nakamura, the catcher, had been taken off the active roster. So
I think the middle reliever Taichi Shiyama is down too.
But I did want to acknowledge one thing, and that was that Masanori Ishikawa beat the Hanshin Tigers this past week, and that gave him a win in each of his 22 seasons since he was a rookie, and yeah. that allowed him to share the NPB record with Tatsuya Yoneda with 20.
It's one of those records that's really not a record, but they're going to call it one. Because two other pitchers have won games in 23 consecutive seasons.
Since they were rookies?
No, so that's the thing. Well, no, since they weren't first-year pros. They were both rookies, but they weren't first-year pros.
Got it. So he was a first-year guy.
Yeah, so that's in the akin of the Tomoyuki Sugano set a record for consecutive wins from the start of the season because Masahiro Tanaka didn't pitch on opening day.
Right, because he was at WBC duty.
That's correct. He was coming. He wasn't active.
Right,
but it is quite an achievement.
Wording, but it is in that I would say, let's say for the better part of 10 years, that Ishikawa really hasn't been a guy. I think once the moment the season ends, I don't think he's a guy they're looking to build around. Let's put it that way. But he ends up being their opening day starter sometimes, or he's at the front of the front end of the rotation, maybe
he was there, you know, the guy they called their ace there for about 10 years. So,
but I would say these past 10 years, I mean, yeah, no. I'm thinking about Masahiro Yamamoto of the Dragons and how each year when we thought maybe at the end of the year, he might say, okay, I'm going to retire. He didn't. And he kept pitching until he's 50.
Mm.
And so that's what I'm thinking, that, you know, Ishikawa is approaching that kind of Himiyasu, Kudo, Masahiro, Yamamoto kind of situation, in that, you know, these guys pitched into their 50s and they didn't throw hard, but they never threw hard. So they're not really losing anything when they lose a couple miles or kilometers per hour off of a so-called fastball. But yeah, I thought it was an achievement. And we know Tony Barnett, the former Swallows pitcher, loves Ishikawa, loves the work ethic, loves the person, loves the pitcher, loves the teammate. We could go on and on.
I do too. I'm a huge, you know, I was one of those guys who were going, like, I used to say, you know, well, Yakult's going to have the, you know, the worst pitching in the league because Masanori Ishikawa is going to be their opening, you know, he's the top of their rotation. But but that was just being jaded, mostly because I didn't watch as carefully, and I didn't know, obviously I didn't know nearly as much then as I do now. Mm-hmm. But watching him pitch, I marvel at this guy, and of course seeing him up close, and you see how jacked this guy is. He's a very small guy, and I, you know, as I used to joke, the Swallows were the team that invented short starters, between him and Yasuhiro Ogawa. It's like they got the market corner. But no, he's just really, he's a bulldog. Both those guys are, and it's like he's not going to walk you. And that's really his thing. He's just gonna change speeds, and he's gonna move the ball up and down in the zone, and make, you know, he'll go after you and throw strikes until you're behind in the count, and then he'll flick that slider or a changeup, and you'll go like, I should be creaming this guy.
As you're walking back to the dugout,
exactly.
I'm sure there are a bunch of fans in the stands at every game at which he pitches, who say, look, I could go down and hit that. That's not fast. It's not
that's
that
your
hard.
Inner Jim Nishi talk.
whoa. Yeah, God rest his soul. But anyway, I mean, you know, I think people, and he beat the Tigers the other day with the okie doke. I mean, this was on Wednesday. He pitched five and a third innings, and basically he's a five and dive guy. He has been that for at least 5 years now here, and sometimes
getting better and better at it. It's like the last 3 years he seems like that's his shtick,
you know. I'm gonna throw my five, so I'll see you.
I think last year he threw six innings once, but he's good at it. He doesn't walk guys, so that's right. Basically, when he gives up hits, they don't cost him that much usually. Gave him the home run the other day, but that was a surprise.
Yeah, well, he scattered four hits and struck out two, no runs and no walks, 75 pitches, and he was done. And the, you know, the Swallows scored some runs, and you look around and it's like, hey, cool, we win this one 5-0. So
no, he's great. He's great to have on the team. He's and just as I said, just what Tony Barnett said, he's a leader. He's a fighter. He's a perfect role model for the young pitchers. You know, what do you got to do? I mean, here's this guy. He's like, it's 189. How many career wins? Oh, 184 career wins. And he's working like if he doesn't get in this extra weight training, he's going to be kicked to the farm team or something. So what am I going to do?
So we've heard about that too as well. So congratulations to him, and we'll see him next time out and see who else he can beat. Let's make a four seam transition. I'm going to call this segment Balls and Spites. Oh, I got Jim to laugh. So I've been obviously in Japan since 1990, late 1990, started watching a full season. My first full season was 1991 of NPB baseball. And immediately when I started to watch games, and it wasn't like it is now where the games are on cable or there's some streaming service or whatever, you could watch the game until I would say 8:50, depending on what team it was. Sometimes the Giants games went longer, but it was about 8:50 and then the games would cut it off. But the 3 hours of games that I got to watch, especially the ones involving the Giants, and there's a lot of anti-Giants sentiment nationwide here in Japan, and there's a lot of nationwide support for the Giants, because what I was told is if you lived in the big cities then that had teams, then sometimes you could watch your teams. For instance, if you lived in Osaka, you could watch the Hanshin Tigers, but if you lived anywhere else, it was Giants games. So the whole country would watch Giants and would support them and wanted them to win. And so I started
lose, but people
or lose. Yeah, the Giants, yeah, depending on
the Giants are still,
it's an institution. Yeah.
Headline. Yeah. You know, so if you put Giants in the lead, people are going to read it because they either want the Giants, they want to read something good about the Giants, or they want to read something bad about the Giants.
Correct. Correct. So, and it was then I started to think, now this is early, maybe 1990, the end of 1991, early 1992. I started thinking, hey, you know what? Every close call, every call at the bag, every tag, every, you know, was that a home run? Was it a foul? Was it over the fence? Every call seems to go the Giants' way. And of course, we're talking way before replay and all this other stuff. And that goes for balls and strikes as well. And close plays at the plate, everything seemed to go their way. And so I'm so glad video replay has ended some of this stuff, because we have seen some calls, maybe let's just say that they were adjudicated a little more fairly in the first place. And so with replay to back up either the umpires making the right call or the wrong call, the umpires chose to support themselves. So they started adjudicating things a little bit more fairly, let's say, so that that replay wouldn't overturn those things. But who knows, right?
We still see plays being overturned, and we still see umpires out of position.
I'm talking about against the Giants specifically.
Right.
Or involving the Giants.
Yeah, but there was a famous one where against the Hanshin Tigers, I remember Katsumi Hirosawa was playing, and they called they blew a call so badly in the Giants' favor. And it was like everybody knew it. The umpire knew it, that the umpiring crew did a makeup call, in which a player was, the other team was, I forget whether it was, but I remember it involved Katsumi Hirosawa in his final years with the, Tigers. And he was like going, "You're kidding me, I'm safe." And I was a play at the plate and he was out by about 3 feet and they just called him safe. And then he's like, "Okay, this is your makeup call. Take it and go away."
Right. So Jim did, first he did a blog post this past week, which I cracked open and read. And I thought that I'm like, yes, I've been saying this for a long time.
I think that was the response of a lot of people. They were like going,
more than
yeah,
two
well,
decades.
We,
yeah.
They're going like, well, we knew this. It's not news. But seeing the data, of course, I didn't actually talk about the data that much in the blog, but
you didn't have to.
Yeah.
So anyway, why don't you talk about what you did and then
okay, with the help of Michael Westbay from scoutdragon.com, I was able to get not a complete data set, but a data set that was good enough to study what happens before every count got to three balls or two strikes. And what I was specifically looking, and I've sort of been interested in the same topic as John for the same reason, are the Giants getting more borderline calls? Are they getting the borderline calls going their way? It's really hard to know without pitch tracking. Now, if we had pitch tracking, then we could say, okay, this pitch was a strike, you know, like you can in MLB now. You know, they blew this call, they blew that call. But we don't have that. And there's another story to that too, but we don't have it. So, but what I thought was, years ago, I thought, well, did the Giants pitchers get more called strike threes than other teams? And the answer I found out was no. And they don't. And Giants batters don't get fewer called strike threes than other teams. So that didn't seem to work. That didn't seem to mesh. But there is that basis that you talked about. And of course, there's the story of Michael DeMuro, You remember Michael DeMuro? Yeah.
I was. Well, there were two instances. One, I was at a game early in Nagoya. It was a preseason game.
Oh, okay.
In which it was the Bay Stars and the Dragons, and there was a play at the plate, and DeMuro made the call at the plate, and so everyone was asking him about that, and I got to interview him right after that game. And then the other was, I think, was out in Gifu.
It was in Gifu, and actually,
Hoshino and Taiho.
Yeah, that's correct, Yasuaki Taiho.
Taiho.
He called it an outside American strike. They told him, okay. Now the story was, before we get to that, actually, I know, as I was talking about my umpire friend, Osamu Ino, who was a former supervisor of umpires for NPB, he was actually umpiring in that game.
Oh.
And the umpire behind the plate was of course DeMuro. But anyway, so that's another story. But the reason I brought up DeMuro is because he was brought in because Hironori Kawashima, the commissioner of the Central League, wanted to prove that umpires were not biased in favor of the Giants. So he brought in an American. Okay. Yeah, that right. Yeah. So that was the plan behind that. Anyway, because that was a thing. The feeling that umpires were biased in the favor of the Giants was large, because there's that huge civil war going on in Japan between people who, people who love the Giants, and then people who hate the Giants. And then, of course, the other people who are just like their own teams and don't really care. They only dislike the Giants. You know, those 100 people in Japan only dislike the Giants because they're not their team.
Okay. Gotcha.
Most of them like their team and hate the Giants too. So, okay. Anyway, so there's this background. And as I said, there have been issues with calls and things. So I looked at, anyway, I've got the data from Michael West Bay of ScoutDragon.com, and I could actually look at how often pitches are called strikes in different counts. In first pitches, how often is a first pitch that's taken called a strike, and how often it's called a ball. And so I have that data from 2009 to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And for the six counts before we get to two strikes or three balls. And what I found was the Giants, well, what I found last year when I had the full set of counts was the Giants weren't getting a lot of help on critical pitch counts that would with three balls or two strikes, but they were getting a ton of help getting ahead in the count from the umpires. They were getting more than their share of strikes first pitches that were taken, and they were getting more than their share of strikes on 1-0 pitches and 0-1 pitches. So I thought, wow, that's interesting. And so I finally started looking at the data I had, and it was much more shocking than I expected to see. And I want you to visualize how it is, we've got 12 teams in NPB.
Okay.
And I did it. The chances of getting a strike varies on the count. It's very easy to get a called strike when you're down 2-0. When the pitcher's down 2-0, to get a 2-0 strike is like 60% of the time on a called pitch.
Okay.
But it's much harder. You know, it depends on the count so much. And basically, whatever the count was, the Giants were better. The Giants... I mean, and a lot better. And if you take the chances of how much better they are, imagine this scenario where you have every team is the same quality. Okay, 12 teams, if they were all the same. Now, how likely is it that teams of the same quality would get to the level of the team below them or above them? Well, in NPB, the 10 teams who are the worst at getting pitches in the the worst at getting strikes on the first pitch, or 1-0 counts or 0-1 counts, which are the most frequent, they're all bunched together. They're basically all as good as the other with minor differences. They're all stacked one on top of the other. Then there's two teams that are outliers. One of them is the Hanshin Tigers. And if the Hanshin Tigers had the same quality of strike throwing as the rest of the other 12 teams, they would be 27 times less likely to do what they're doing.
27. Okay.
27 times. So there's all the other teams are like the next team down, let's say Hiroshima Carp, the next team down is the Swallows. They're about 1.2 times less likely to get that much better. And it's like that, you know, it's one, one, one. And then you get to the Tigers 27 times. Okay. Now, how much better are the Giants than the Tigers? Well, if they were both of the same quality, I have to actually look the number up because it was so weird, so high. It's 4,709 times. So, you know, so picture this. There's 10
what?
Teams. There's
okay. 10. What? That
exactly.
Is not, that's insane.
Exactly. The chances that the Giants would be so, and actually the Tigers were better at getting 1-0 strikes than the Giants were over from 2009 to 2022. But the Giants are just, when the count is, excuse me, 0-1 strikes. When the count's 1-0, and when the count's no balls, no strikes, the Giants are just like, they're like in another universe. They're just not like playing by the same rules. I mean, the percentages are very small, but you have to understand 10 teams are all smashed together. And then, you know, the 10 teams are all Earth and between the Earth and the Moon. And then the Tigers are where Mars is, and the Giants are like where Pluto is. You know, it is like they're like not even playing in the same game.
They're worlds away. They're literally worlds
now,
away.
Now, what that means is probably not as extreme as I think it is, but I'm going to do some more modeling and we'll see. But I think it's going to be hard to and talk to some people who actually do stats more than I do, because this is fairly complicated math.
You have to go to statistician level, yes.
Yeah, I got to go to some university professor and I'm searching now. But yeah, I think it's going to be pretty unlikely that even the best team in a 12, if you took a 12-team league and they were the best team every year, that the chances that they would be that good are probably, I'm going to guess, somewhere around 1 in a million.
Yeah, that's like, I guess, just, you know, hitting a $100,000 lottery like every month, right?
Yeah, it's like going, like, we're going to just go. Yeah, I know. And
then you don't have to work and so it's like a regular salary.
So my blog post was sort of it was sort of the story I've been telling for a while that I figured the Giants figured this out. I think the Giants figured this out around 2017. When pitch tracking data started to come into Japan, and they were saying, you know, we don't have to throw the ball in the zone to get strikes. Now, there are other things I need to check on that, because if that's true, other things should be true. And I haven't done the research on that. But there's some evidence to show the Giants have become and the Central League has become a chase, you know, throw the ball out of the zone and make the batters chase league.
Mm.
And the Pacific League has been a challenge batters in the zone league.
Mm.
And with the Central League has done that, with the exception of, I think, the DeNA BayStars and the Swallows have been the two teams that have challenged, been more throwing more strikes than the rest of the league. But anyway, we'll get on to that later. But I just did want to bring out that data. I showed John a graph, and I think he made a comment about that probably we can't repeat in the podcast for violating some kind of gender policy or something.
No, just stop. Anyway, remember I talked to Tyrone Woods of the Dragons when the Dragons were at the height of the peak of their powers in 2006 and 2007, and I asked him why he had success against Giants pitchers because they were good, and he basically characterized it in this simple phrase. He said, "You mean your pitchers don't run from me? You know, they don't. They throw more pitches in the zone." That's what his comment was.
Well, certainly they did. They used to.
And well, I mean, and quite honestly, as difficult as it is to throw a baseball and command it from that distance, I would be on the side of pitchers if I were an umpire. And I would say, hey, close enough. But what you're telling us is that the count matters to the umpires as well.
Oh yeah. But it matters to the hitters also, because they're not going to
and the pitchers talk about that, how everything changes when the count is different, and when is in their favor, everything, a lot of the circumstances change. So I would be back there. They would have to nickname me Steve Reich, because that's what I would be calling. I would be saying Steve Reich on the pitches that are close. But if they're not giving that to the other teams, we've got to figure this thing out. There has to be a better way. I know umps make mistakes. I'm totally aware of that. That's part of the game.
There could be reasons. I mean, if the Giants actually are throwing more pitches in the zone.
But that's where your statistician will come in, and he will say, okay, what is the likelihood that only this team is able to command pitches well enough to throw them in the zone to get to this number?
If they're throwing more first pitches in the zone, then what would you expect? You would expect to see more balls in play on the first pitch. You'd expect to see more, fouls and swings and misses on the first pitch than with other teams if they're throwing more in the zone, because more batters are going to take a crack at them.
Well, I don't know what the notion of in the zone means to you.
It doesn't necessarily mean close enough, brushing
the outside of the zone.
If you're throwing hittable pitches,
hittable is another nebulous comment because. Okay. But I know what you're saying. But,
okay,
I
mean, if you throw a pitch
to Vladimir Guerrero, if you're not rolling it up there, or throwing it above his head 10 feet, it's hittable. So, I mean,
okay, Adrian Beltre too. Yeah, sure. But the point, the idea is that a lot of pitchers, and I've watched this, I always laugh when I see a batter like Kensuke Kondo or Akira Nakamura, and the guy tries to make them chase on the first pitch by throwing a pitch. I'm like, this guy ain't gonna swing. I'm going like, what, were you planning to go 2-0 in the count against this guy? Because he's just looking and laughing.
Right. And also, when you do this with the statistician, you also have to find out about Giants hitters, what their numbers are against.
Well, actually the Giants hitters aren't particularly good. The other thing you'll notice is that one thing you'll notice from the data was not a surprise. When it comes to the counts from the pitcher's side of view, all the teams are all squashed together. And that's really pretty not surprise. That's not surprising, because the big difference in hitting is not the pitcher, it's the hitter. Because there's no pitcher who's bad enough that opposing batters look like Munetaka Murakami. and there's no pitcher who's good enough who all the batters who all the hitters are. Pick somebody bad. Pick Jinjiro Sumitani. There's no pitcher.
Even he's better than the Dragons hitters right now.
There's no pitcher in NPB who's good enough that he makes every batter look like Jinjiro Sumitani. The batters have the real hard job. They have to track the ball. They have to hit the ball. They have to, hit the round ball, the round bat squarely, which is a language problem as much as anything else. But they've got to do all this stuff. And what you find is the big factor is whether the guy can hit or not. So what you see with the batters is that the variation between teams and in counts is much wider. It's like all over the place. The teams are all not packed together. They're much more widely varied, because batters are the ones who are making the bigger difference. If you have a team of really good batters against an average pool of pitchers, they're going to do really well. If you have a good pitchers against the whole pool of average batters, they're going to do pretty much as they're going to do only slightly better than the other pitchers.
All right. Well, I'm going to tweet out as I do usually on Mondays, a link to the podcast. So you can tweet out or retweet with the graphic, and then also a link to your blog post. And that'd be awesome.
Okay.
All right. Let's make a two-seam transition and talk about some record moments that have occurred this season. Number one, Hayato Sakamoto, who was taking a lot of heat earlier in the season has begun to hit a little bit better recently. In this past week, he hit double number 423, and that put him sixth on the all-time list and had allowed him to jump ahead of the legendary Sadaharu Oh of the Giants. And so that was a real incredible achievement for this kid, who is obviously slowing down, but is still lethal at times. And he did get heaps of praise for that. And I'm really glad. And he still, you know, last time I did see him, I wasn't able to see him when I did the Brinson interview, but hopefully see him again and ask him about his back and how he's doing. I'm not sure how much longer he's going to last as a top line hitter, but I think he's going to be able to break. The all-time leader is in doubles in NPB is Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, the current Dragons manager, and he has 487.
That's about probably about four full seasons at his age.
At 423 is where Sakamoto is. I don't know. I wouldn't try to even put a season thing on because I don't know with his injuries and everything. I don't know how long he can last as a player.
Yeah.
But he can last as a hitter. Maybe if the Central League eventually adopts the DH, he can DH. And, you know, good hitters never disappear. They only fade away. And he might be able to stay. Just like, well, eventually they disappear. They don't disappear suddenly. They not like the pitchers. Pitchers are gone.
Yeah, usually batters, they disappear. Good hitters just keep going until they fade away, basically.
Okay, but I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, but it's the problem is it's the hitters who are marginal. They tend to just disappear because they're defense isn't good enough to keep him on the field anymore.
Right. So yeah, very like I said, Sakamoto, I think the record is 487 and would be in jeopardy if he can turn things around physically and, like I said, be a more of a DH than a guy who plays in the field and hang on those last 3-4 years when he's approaching 40 as a DH. I'm sorry, as a pinch hitter / DH sometimes, but you know, those upper body injuries can be deadly for baseball players, but the back injuries can be career enders. And if he has shown that he has struggled with back problems so far here since he turned 30.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Which is worst, career ending or deadly?
Moving right along.
Okay, sorry. I'm just being a snark.
I know you are. And the week before last, Takuya Nakamura, Okawari-kun, and I was thinking, Okawari-kun, this dude is almost 40. Can we get him to Okawari-sama or something like that? Because he's not a little pudgy kid anymore. He's a pudgy older dude with kids who are older than my kids. So let's get rid of this coon. But anyway, he notched his 2,000th strikeout. So he already had surpassed Kazuhiro Kiyohara for most all time. And I remember we had a question from our faithful listener, Glenn, many years back now about how Kiyohara had been he had the most strikeouts all time in MPB and how this should be a stigma. And for Okawari-kun, I don't think it's a stigma because so many people, he's such a likable guy, such a supported and beloved figure, not only by the Lions, but I think a lot of fans throughout Japan at least respect him. It's not like Kiyohara who, if he wasn't playing for your team, you weren't rooting for him, basically. And I think Okawari-kun has more fans from other teams than Kiyohara might have had during his career. Who knows? That's not something that we can measure. But the 2,000 strikeouts, meaning Nakamura, it's not such a dubious honor with him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. With other guys, I think this might have been a stigma. But with him, I just think it's one of those oh well records. Oh, well, I mean, he got that, but he was such a great hitter and he has 400 and whatever home runs. But do you know who has? So I looked at it because I was looking at the strikeouts and obviously Kiyohara is number two on the list. Who do you think is number three on the list of strikeouts all time in MPV. I know we gave up trivia a long time ago.
Yeah, but I was looking at the list today and I was surprised.
And I knew you would be. When I wrote this down, I said, well, I know Jim is going to look at the list, so I don't
have to worry about it. Nakamura slipped past me, which is sort of, which is like saying, yeah.
don't be mean. Don't be mean.
It's not the same. It's not the same as saying that guy, where's that mosquito, you know? But yeah.
462 home runs in the career of Nakamura, but go ahead.
Yeah.
So you know who's number three?
I do. Surprising. Motonobu Tanishige.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame compiler catcher.
But of course, the thing here is relevant because another number with Tanishige is he's got so many strikeouts because, you know, he started playing the same year fire was invented.
I think it was the year before fire. I think
okay,
they had just learned how to purify water.
Okay, well he got me once. Once when he joined the Dragons, they were playing a preseason game. The year he joined the Dragon, they were playing a preseason game in Hamamatsu against the Giants, and I went there to talk to some people, and
because he was on the Bay Stars at that time.
He had just joined the Dragons.
Okay,
he had as just a free joined. Agent.
All right,
and I was.
Thought you said the year before.
Yeah. No. This was the year he joined the Dragons, and it was the preseason. And I was wearing a MC Hammer tour jacket that I got as swag from.
Not the pants.
No, just the tour jacket, the hammer don't hurt him tour jacket. I got his swag from my gig as an English teacher at Pepsi Cola Japan. Anyway, he comes to me and he says, and I was about 33, and he says, I had that jacket when I was 18. You smurf, get out of my sight.
You smurf. Oh, well. All right. Well, yeah. So he's number three. But anyway, so yeah, I don't think it's that bad a deal with Nakamura surpassing 2,000 strikeouts. I just wonder who is going to be a player who surpasses that, because that's, you're going to have to play a long time to do that. All right. One note before we get to the question this week, and that's that Hotaka Yamakawa, also of the Lions, was removed from the active roster this past week after a report of sexual assault that surfaced. Now, I didn't like his comment when he was asked about the matter, and that was his comment was to say that he had nothing to say.
Right.
I know we love our athletes, and they represent the general public, and within the general public, there are people who are deviants in some way. So hopefully we don't have too many in the baseball world, but we'll obviously have to let this whole thing play out. Which is what I hoped he would have said something. I hope let's just let the legal process play out or something. But he had nothing to say. I did not like that. But I just want the best for all parties involved. I didn't read the report, but before we started recording, you said you did.
Well, I read stories. I read the news stories. I did not read the weekly magazine online article on the online. My wife did, and she was informing me some of the gory details. But basically, the story was sexual assault in a Tokyo hotel, and the woman apparently was left bleeding, and reported to the police, and the police are investigating. And the Lions have some experience with this kind of stuff, which I will get to in the newsletter in this weekend's newsletter. I'll spoil it for my subscribers, but it's a shame. The Lions basically said on Friday, so that was Thursday that came out, and then Friday the Lions deactivated him and said, we are taking into various things into account when we deactivated him, including his condition. So it wasn't. The Lions are really, it's like there's a fine line there between absolute nonsense
and fake nonsense.
And, well, let's put it this way. There's a fine line between credibility and baloney. And they're they're treading that one pretty carefully. They didn't want to come out and say it's because of the accusations. They said, we're also taking into consideration his condition because he hasn't been physically fit.
Well, they say, and yes, we know he played at the WBC limited.
Yes.
He saw limited time there. He did not hit particularly well, but he didn't have a lot of opportunity. Then he came back with the team, and he has yet to hit a home run. So that might be part of it. Who knows? I don't want to speculate. I'm not going to. You know, he's not hitting 300, but he's not hitting zero. He just usually has a bunch of home runs. In the past, I don't know, 3-4 years, it just seems like Jason Koskri, our buddy, tweets out, friends don't let friends pitch to Yamakawa. I mean, you know, he's just tearing it up. And we haven't seen any tweets like that. And like I said, he doesn't have any home runs. And thank goodness Nakamura has been hitting for the Lions because he has saved that aspect. But
Here's an interesting thing, because I got into this long. I mean, normally when you, I don't know.
Is there a normal?
Yeah, no, there isn't. When it comes to Twitter, there is not really a normal, because Twitter basically, I think, was invented so people could rant about things that they knew nothing about.
Mm.
And this person was actually not quite that wrong, but they were referring to another player in Japan who's had issues of a similar nature and saying that most countries, I'll quote, paraphrase him, but I tried to have a conversation with him, and it was kind of like that. But he was indignant that people would talk about what happened to a player in America when he wasn't arrested, when he was never charged with a crime. And I said, well, yeah, but these things are on the record. And he said, most countries don't report on allegations. So,
what?
Yeah. Well,
what color is the sky in that world?
I know. You can tell that to the Lions, and they can just cross that off their list because it never happened.
There you go.
So there we go. So maybe this Twitter person will now blame Yamakawa's situation on this other player, and how people are reporting on the facts connected with his past for this sudden surge in reporting. You know, this person was taking the point of view that men's careers were being ruined by the Me Too movement and, you know, unfounded allegations. And I said, they're not allegation. You know, it's not an allegation when somebody swears to it in court. Well, I mean, now it's a sworn statement. You know, it's something that they could go into jail for perjury for if they're telling that, you know, if they're fibbing.
Right. So, well, yeah. Yeah.
So it's different than just saying.
You can go to jail for filing a false police report. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's all kinds of penalties that happen when you do that. And I'm saying that's truth. And they said, yeah, well. Yeah, well, a lot of yeah, wells, and and I just finally had to mute this person, so they might actually still be going on my timeline for all I know.
Well, hopefully they run out of time.
Yeah, the lack of answers from me probably slowed them down. So if you're listening, you know who you are, and it's not out of ill will. I mean, I was just trying to have a discussion, but it was not always easy. But I don't mean any ill will either, but you know, we all have difference of opinions, and that's fair enough.
Well, it's sometimes talking to some of these people on Twitter is like trying to coax a tree stump to grow back into a tree. But anyway,
just call me Stumpy.
There you go. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. So this question is a continuation from Mike's email from last week. And Mike is from Scranton, Pennsylvania. And again, he basically wants to know about our preferences. So he says, I generally prefer to listen to MLB games rather than watch them. I've always enjoyed the more casual flow, the great storytelling of announcers, and above all, the radio ads. I have no idea why, but I love the jingles and random businesses that find their way onto national platforms. How often do you opt for radio broadcasts over TV? And are feeds in Japan similar in nature with their advertising? If so, what are some of the quirky local ads you like? I'm not sure if you have the legal ability or desire to play any on the show, but I'd love to hear a few if they exist. It'll be years before I can hope to follow radio broadcasts, but if I ever reach that point, is there an option for people to listen anywhere? Based on the way you describe the way MPB chooses to run its business, I'm not that helpful. All right, Mike, so you got a few questions in there. First, let's go back to how often do we opt for radio broadcasts over TV? Jim?
Well, in Japan, basically never, because I don't have a radio anymore.
You don't need a radio. There's an app.
An
app for everything.
I know, but I don't know how to use it. I have an app on my phone, and I don't know how to use it.
You're fired. Give me that smartphone. If the smartphone, you're going to let the smartphone be smarter than you, put it down.
I assume that it's smarter than me. That's okay. Why I have computers. I don't count.
All right. There's an app called Najiko here in Japan, and I pay the minimal or nominal fee so that I can listen to every radio station nationwide here. But you can't listen to it outside of Japan, because every time I leave the country and try to use it, I can't. So I don't know, Mike, whether you can do that. But I don't opt to listen to radio broadcasts over TV necessarily. I like both. And of course, I want to see the action. I'd rather see with my own eyes what's going on and decipher for myself than be told. But I do like the radio because you don't have any footage to watch. The radio announcers are very colorful with the expressions. They're constantly giving you information, feeding you information about what's going on the field. The color analysts are telling you stories, talking about what's going on with the players. They always do pre-game interviews, and so they sprinkle that information throughout the broadcast and let you know what they talked to some player about, you know, what's bothering them. Somebody's got a bad ankle. So you get a little bit more information in that respect. It's a lot quieter watching the TV announcers because they have the footage there. You're watching what's going on the screen. So you don't really they don't have to tell you everything. And so sometimes it's not that I prefer the radio, but a lot of times if I'm going home, I'll flip the radio on because it's just easier. And like I said, I can go from station to station, from region to region a lot easier than if I'm using my Pacific League player. I'll put one radio on. I'm sorry. I put the radio on to listen to one game, and on my backup iPod, I'll put on a game to watch. So I've got two games going while I'm riding on the train. Go ahead, Jim.
I used to. Okay. The situation has changed so much. Of course, I grew up listening to San Francisco Giants games because we couldn't see most of them. We could only see road games. They never broadcast home games. Not quite true. I think in my life, they probably broadcast before I moved to Japan in 1984, I think I saw two Giants home games broadcast when they were sellouts.
Well, yeah, sellouts or at the end of the season when they meant something.
Well, they had sellouts at the end of the season in 1984.
Had to, because that's when Joe Morgan hit that home run, right?
That's correct.
Yes, I remember that too.
And Rick Monday hit a grand slam and ruined the Giants season on a Friday night, and I was there.
Oh gosh. All right. We're scaring the kids. They're like, yeah. Rick, what? Joe who?
okay. Anyway, so that was, yeah. So but at that time, yeah, listening on the radio was the thing. I grew up listening on the radio. I loved it. When I moved to Japan again, I have no internet, no feed. So I'm listening to I used to listen on a shortwave radio to the Armed Forces radio, and I'd get a baseball game every day. And then when I moved to Tokyo, I listened on the AM radio, and I'd get baseball games every day from around MLB. And they just would like flip a dial and pick a station to broadcast. And I got to listen to Ernie Harwell doing the Dragons games, the Tigers games. And I got to listen to different people doing, different people doing different teams games. It was absolutely, it was incredible. It was just an incredible experience. And at the same time, I listened to Japanese games on the radio because I was a Swallows fan. And most Swallows games were not on TV. The home games would be on Bunka Hoso, and some of their road games would be on other big networks if they were playing the Dragons or the Tigers or the Giants. But I did like it because radio broadcasters, and I don't know, I liked it better than TV, but I found TV announcers to be very much, I don't know, less partisan. The radio announcers were, I think, more partisan. You know, they'd be, when Dan Gladden was playing for the Giants, I remember a famous play where Gladden's going for the ball. He's going for the ball. He makes an amazing catch. Oh, and he dropped it. What a boneheaded display from the Giants center fielder. You know, things like that. You know, it was so partisan. It was so much fun. And I think because it's on radio, sometimes the people, well, as in the States, sometimes you'll have guys like, if they're broadcasting the New York Yankees, they'll say just some things that are incredibly things they couldn't get away with saying on television because they might get picked up on a national feed or something.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, wow, how dumb does this guy gotta be? But on radio here, you'd get some of the real dumb things, the dumbest things said, and things that, you know, maybe the other broadcasters wanted to say, but they'd only say on radio. And that, it was a big help to me when I was writing my analytical guides, because I could say, you know, these people are saying this on radio. How reasonable is that, Nance? And that would be a good question to talk about.
Yeah.
But now I have TV streamed everywhere, and I don't have a radio, so I watch the TV. I
have a radio. It's on your iPhone. Stop saying that.
Well, but I don't have one.
No, it's an app.
Now
radios are apps now. Anyway. Yeah.
So anyway, I like it. I don't remember jingles on, I don't listen to Japanese radio that much. I didn't even then. Do you remember jingles on the radio?
Oh, well, I still listen to the radio all the time, and there are a lot of jingles. Mike, I didn't record any and try to play them on our show. I don't know what the rights situation is, so I'm going to avoid that. But there are a lot of commercials because they repeat. And that was one of the things when I first came to Japan and started watching TV or listening to the radio. That was how I studied, because the programs and the subject matter that was going on in the programs, I couldn't follow. But the commercials were repetitive. They would come on every 10 minutes. So, you pick up part of the commercial or the jingle or something at the beginning, and then you pick up part of it at the end. And then you put the middle together, and then you can remember. So I would study Japanese that way. You know, I can sing one of the jingles that I still remember listening to
radio.
Okay. Nandemo kashimasu kondo sando. That is one of the ones that that sticks in my head all the time, because this is one, this it's a rental agency, and it rents out anything, as the jingle says. And they, you know, if they don't have what you want to rent, they'll buy it and rent it to you or lease it. And this is a little jingle from the CBC. I think it's CBC Radio. It's either CBC or Tokai Radio in Nagoya, one or the other. But we can't play any of those things on the radio here. But I was going to try to tape one, but there's some other ones that these people don't realize how often these things play. And so they start to, it becomes an earworm, and it starts eating away at your brain because they play it so much. And there are some that just drive me nuts. So that's why I was making a point to mention that I can change and go to a different station. So as soon as the third out hits, I'm on my app and going to a different region. I might be in Hokkaido listening to the Fighters game, and then the third out is made, and I jump to Osaka to listen to the Tigers, because I got to get out of there before hearing any of these commercials, because I got them all memorized because they play them so much. It's awful. So I try to avoid listening to the commercials these days, and that makes me want to listen to the, or opt to go with the PL player that I have, because they don't have commercials in those things, so you can just skip through it. it's more trouble to go to a different game on the PL player, but I'll use that too. But you know, it's just about what's going on in the game. If I want to see exactly what happened, especially if there's a rundown play, which are always exciting in Japan, although I did see it almost, and I can't say perfectly executed, but it was near perfectly executed, a rundown play with the Rakuten Eagles recently. I think it was yesterday's game.
They had
a good one. But sometimes you need to see what's going on. And sometimes the announcers get so excited and the crowd is screaming that you really can't tell what's going on in the game. And it's not a language problem, I would love to think. It's that there's too much going on. The announcers talking too excitedly and too fast, and the crowd's making too much noise. And I have to pick out a word here and there, but I dare some other Japanese person to tell me exactly what's being said in those instances too, because it's really difficult. What was the last part of this question here that he had? I think he had three. So is there an option for people to listen anywhere? You know, I don't know, Mike, you're going to have to go on. It sounds like you might be studying a little bit of Japanese, so you're going to have to put that to use and go on and do some searches. I always start with YouTube, and there are guys out there right now who are budding radio announcers who do the play-by-play over the radio on YouTube. So they don't have any footage of the game going on, but they have a box score up there, and they have balls and strikes, and they have the bases, and they tell you how many runners are on, what the count is, and there's a running box score that's on there, and those guys are talking about the game. So those are available on YouTube. Usually what I put in is Proyakyu Live. And if you put that in Japanese, you can get some games that are going on. But again, that's all I know about. I don't know about the radio portion. I don't think that's going to happen soon, as you talked about in your question there. Jim, any suggestions?
No.
Okay.
More or less what he said. I mean, you always have to pick. The biggest thing learning anything is, or improving anything, is repetition. And so it helps to do something you're interested in that you can sort of doggedly stay after, even when it's not easy. So basically listening to baseball, listening to people on the radio. If you can get it, John says YouTube. He's much more astute at this than I am. I've seen a few things like Pro Yaku News on the YouTube. That's helped me a little bit. It's especially helped me in terms of baseball language. So,
okay. All right. I know we have another question lined up, so that's great. Thank you very much, Dave. But Mike, really appreciate you sending in a list of questions, and do so again as soon as you can. And listen, MP3 it, you know, just record it into your smartphone if you have one, and then shoot it over that way. You can send it via email. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag High Heat. And you can do like Mike and Dave have done and send your question via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. And also you can send us a message or leave us a message on the Facebook page. Already got our interview for next week all lined up, and that's going to come with some video that Jim's going to edit and throw up.
You are such an optimist.
And throw up on the YouTube page. Well, I'll put it on, but he's going to get it back to me. So
yeah,
now that I've said this, he has to do it. He's committed. But it shouldn't take him very long. I think he has to do very limited editing on the front end, and that's it. And then throw some music on there. So look for that soon. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.